2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. Vice President Harris is taking her campaign as the likely Democratic presidential nominee on the road. First stop, Milwaukee.
This campaign is also about two different visions for our nation. One, where we are focused on the future. The other, focused on the past.
CBS News correspondent Robert Costa tells us the Republicans aren't pulling their punches going after Harris.
Congressional Republicans have already made sharp comments alluding to Harris's race.
A lot of Democrats feel they have to stick with her because of her ethnic background.
Tennessee Republican Tim Burchett has used the term DEI, which stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
100%. She was a DEI hire.
Those calling for the Secret Service director to resign have gotten their wish, as CBS's Natalie Brand reports.
Facing pressure from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle resigned her position. In a letter, she said the scrutiny over the last week has been intense and will continue to remain as our operational tempo increases. As your director, I take full responsibility for the security lapse.
Donna Massey's daughter, Sonia, was shot and killed in her home by a police officer in Springfield, Illinois. He's facing a murder charge, and Donna Massey is facing the loss of her daughter.
It's not real. This can't be real. I don't know how this could be real. I'm sorry.
A state law enforcement standards board says the fire deputy had been employed by a half dozen police agencies just since 2020. British blues musician John Mayall has died, according to his family on social media.
John Mayall is credited with helping develop the English take on urban Chicago-style rhythm and blues. That take played an important role in the blues revival of the late 1960s. Mayall never achieved the fame of those he mentored, but even into his late 80s, he was pounding out his version of Chicago blues. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
It's called the world's toughest foot race. 97 runners have pushed off in Death Valley for the annual 48-hour Badwater Ultra Marathon. They are 19 to 69 years old, come from 21 countries and 26 U.S. states. By the way, it was 135 degrees there just the other day. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris says she's running a people-powered campaign to beat Donald Trump. Harris visited Milwaukee Tuesday to launch her presidential campaign, only 2 days after Joe Biden dropped out of the race.
So friends, we have 105 days until Election Day, and in that time, we've got some work to do. But we're not afraid of hard work. We like hard work, don't we? And we will win this election.
Harris has already raised over $100,000 for her campaign since Sunday afternoon. The plane that crashed and killed two people near the EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh was privately owned and not a part of the air show. The cause of the crash on Monday is still under investigation, and the names of the deceased have not been released. Last year at Air Venture, two people died and two were injured in a mid-air collision during the air show. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers get the win at Wrigley. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Another tight ball game between the Cubs and the Brewers in Chicago. It came down to a simple hit up the middle by Bryce Terang in the top of the eighth to break a 0-0 tie on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Base hit back up the middle. Bryce Terang gets it done. Two strikes, two outs, no big deal. All that early work pays is off.
And that's the way it ended. Milwaukee 1, Chicago nothing. Bryce Tarang talked about spending extra time before the game during batting practice working on that kind of situation.
Feels good. I want to win, you know. But, you know, we won tonight and we just got to move on to tomorrow. And, you know, it feels good. I'm happy the team won.
The series tied at one game apiece. They finish up today. NFL, the Packers held their practice another day without Jordan Love as contract talks continue. The team signing Jason Eason as a third quarterback in camp to help out. Eason's been with six other NFL teams, including Green Bay, earlier this spring. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For the overnight, partly cloudy skies, light winds, and some patchy fog forming. Lows will drop to the upper 50s. After the morning patchy fog, we'll see mostly sunny but hazy skies, light winds, or highs will top out in the upper 70s. It's 60 at our studios.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us for a Hump Day edition next time on the show. Our old friend Pat Kreitlow from Up North News and much more. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Hump Day!
You're listening to 93.5 The Tappel Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for The Todd Albaugh Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning and welcome, to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Putinoff, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us if you would like. You can call, you can text at 855-752-4842. If you're watching in the live stream, leave a comment on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Excited to have our guests join us. Reverend Mark Elston is a minister and executive director of Press House, which is a campus ministry student housing community at UW-Madison. Also the co-founder of Rooted Good, a nonprofit that helps churches think creatively about how to use their spaces. Good morning, Reverend Mark. How are you?
I'm great. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. On the one hand, this is bad news because, and this has been a trend nationwide for a while, that people are not coming to church. They are not attending church in nearly the numbers that they used to, and even more and more Americans now have no religious affiliation. So what do we do with all of these church buildings? And that's something that you're looking at on how to repurpose them. So where do you start with something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, as you know, we're facing kind of a tsunami of change in regard to the way people interact with their faith, the way people engage in religion in the United States. And that translates into a major shift in the way buildings and property are used, right? I mean, just the sheer number of buildings that we have, the way buildings were designed, that's all changing in terms of what is useful today. So, you know, we start in our organization at Rooted Good, supporting churches, really with the question of, Who are you and who is your neighbor? Where are you located in your congregation? Who is around you? What's going on in your neighborhood today? Not what was going on 50 years ago, but what's going on today? And how do we reconnect with sort of the needs and opportunities that are happening in a community, in a neighborhood right now in ways that might be able to support people's flourishing in new ways that perhaps the church wasn't involved with previously.
I mean, that sounds like a tremendous amount of work as well. I remember when I actually spoke to somebody about, you know, we were having a gentleman on to talk about repurposing churches. They immediately got like, what are they going to do with them? I'm like, no, nothing bad. They're not knocking them down or like they're using the space for good and they're using it for the community, which I think, you know, I would say church is for in the first place.
I would totally agree. Yes. Although I would say that if we don't think of ways to repurpose for them for good, they will end up getting knocked down.
Yes.
And they will end up getting repurposed.
Well, I was wrong then.
Yeah. I think that's sort of the call I'm trying to make in a way, actually. That's why I wrote the book Gone for Good. That's why I do the work I do, is trying to sort of, you know, raise that awareness that in fact, if we aren't intentional, and by we meaning church people as well as cities, municipalities, communities, if we aren't intentional, then we're going to wake up 20 years from now and a bunch of these things, these properties are going to be something else. And we may or may not be happy with what the something else is they become.
That's an excellent point. And going back to just the best way to serve the community, because much like public schools, churches have always been a hub of communities, correct? Where people join, they come together, they know each other's names, they develop community. And so that's just a critically important part of neighborhoods.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that many spaces sort of left in our world where people can get together, especially where they don't have to pay for something, right? Yeah. I mean, you at least, even at Starbucks, you got to buy a cup of coffee or something, right? But libraries and kind of schools, that's about it, you know? And then there's community centers that are popping up. But ironically, we've had community centers for a long time. They were called churches. You know? It's where people go for small food pantries. You know, it's where they go, where the Girl Scout troop meets, or where AA groups meet, or, you know, where I live in Madison, voting. A lot of our polling places are churches.
Yes.
And where are we going to vote when some of these places are gone and closed?
That's an excellent point.
I know I grew up here in Waukesha, and the church I went to, St. Mary's, right across the way, our meeting area was in the basement, and it was called the community room. That was the official title of it. And Reverend, is it sort of pardon the term, revelation for people to understand that the building can be used for something? Because what we see now, we see a lot of churches becoming abandoned spaces and then being taken over by other churches. Does it seem like to some, they might say, well, it's a church, so let a church move in because it's a church. It's got church stuff. Whereas you can say, no, we can do so much more with it. We've got so much space. It's a beautiful beautiful decoration. Is it like really opening the eyes to people to the ability to use the space you have?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the realities is that there aren't enough new churches to fill in and replace sort of churches that are closing. So that model, what you describe, was very common. A church building became home to another church, right? But we've now reached a point where there are more churches closing every year than they're opening. So there aren't enough to kind of come in and fill that. So then, yeah, you have this question of what else can it be? And I would argue, I guess, that, you know, as a Christian, at least a Christian pastor, the early church has always done things that are not just simply getting together to sing songs and hear a sermon preached. You know, they've done all sorts of socially oriented activity from the very, very beginning, from the time of Jesus. And so what I think I'm really sort of suggesting is we just think about that a little bit more expansively. And then how can these facilities that we have be put to use for the good of communities beyond getting together for an hour on a Sunday morning? Nothing wrong with that at all. I'm a pastor. I love worship. But, you know, beyond that, what else can we be doing? Yeah. And in addition or in replacement of that, in some cases where the church is actually closed, what else can we be doing with these facilities?
It's about walking the walk.
Absolutely. Exactly. Living it, being community, religious community together in neighborhoods, just living it as opposed to just talking about it. Right. And many churches have been doing that for a long time. That's not new. But there is a bit of a sort of eye-opening awareness of that we can do some of this in newer ways or even more expansive ways. And at Rooted Good, we focus a lot on what we call social enterprise, which are activities that are both missional and mission-aligned and serving the neighborhood, but that also have some sort of revenue-generating component to them so that they're a little bit more financially sustainable and viable. And that often looks like affordable housing projects or we've seen churches turning food pantries into community-owned grocery co-ops, sort of grocery stores, actually.
That's really great.
Really go after the food desert in their neighborhood, but it's actually a much bigger operation than a food pantry. Daycare centers, of course, have been something that churches have done for a while, and sort of specialized versions of that. A church that went through our program in Alabama now has 9 entrepreneurs using their space. They're like a small business entrepreneur incubator in their church. 9 different small businesses are now starting out of the church facility. Like, really exciting. So those sorts of things are, you know, just really thinking much more expansively about what it means to be a faith community present in a neighborhood.
You know, Reverend, I will be honest and open with you. I am a man without faith, but what I love hearing is utilizing these spaces to address issues that we talk about all the time. We talk about childcare. We talk about access. food deserts is a very important thing. And the growing of young minds into business owners, into entrepreneurs, or getting them vocations in other places, whether it's trade schools. And it, to see those spaces, churches being used for that, I think is very, very inspiring to everyone involved. And for me personally, like when I think of a church, I think of I was born and raised Catholic. So I think of those churches built in the 1800s, early 1900s, stonemason, you know, but now churches are, I want to say this without being disrespectful, but like you have these gigantic spaces, these gigantic, you know,
mega
churches with a theater and a school and the stuff like that. And it feels like, you know, what you're doing is trying to provide something a little more on the ground for everyone involved. Cause I mean, imagine you have to be a member of those churches to take part in those services and programs, but this is something for everyone. Come in, no matter who you are, what you believe, where you come from, get the help, get the food, whatever you need. I think that's absolutely wonderful. Does that spread to, is it interfaith? It's got to be interfaith, I imagine, right?
Yeah, I think most of these projects end up being somewhat interfaith, or at least they involve partnership, right? So this is not something we always tell churches, not something that churches do completely on their own. I mean, churches are not going to build an affordable housing project with just their members, you know?
Right.
I mean, they're going
right.
to need to partner with folks, right? And I would argue that any community or any project is stronger when it is done in partnership. And often that is interfaith or sort of across lines of whether they're faith or not faith. All of that's fine, right? I mean, I think many churches that are doing this sort of work operate out of their own faith commitments, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not able to also partner with people of different faith commitments or no faith commitment. That's what we've done at a press house here at the University of Wisconsin, Madison campus. You know, we offer housing for about 240 students. And we offer it out of our faith commitments, but the students that live with us are not required to have any to share that same commitment. They're welcome to be of any background. They know that we're a church, but they also feel very free to be who they are in our setting. And that to me feels like the strongest, healthiest way to go about this sort of work.
If you're just joining us, the Reverend Mark Elston is a Presbyterian minister. He's the executive director of Press House, which is a campus ministry and student housing community at UW-Madison, also co-founder of Rooted Good, a nonprofit that helps churches think creatively about how to use their spaces.
I was just going to say what you just said there, Reverend, is even though I don't have faith anymore, I understand it. And it sounds like the perfect reflection of Christ's love. What you just said is just helping and being there, and something we need to hear more about, because we hear a lot of people taking the Christian values, quote unquote, and remaking into what they think it is. And what you're talking about, I think, is the truest form, which is just being there for all, period.
Yeah, I'll say amen to that.
Well, wasn't it that Jesus who said, however you treat the least of me, something
yeah,
along those lines,
and,
right? Love your neighbor.
And he said some good stuff.
It was all kind of pretty positive.
Yeah.
Positive messaging from the whole New Testament.
Yeah.
If you have questions or comments, you can join us 855-752-4842. The Reverend Mark Elston is our guest. We will be back after a few brief messages. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Are you a veteran who needs assistance? Do you know a veteran who needs help? Those who bravely served our country should not have to worry about how they will afford their next meal, where they will sleep at night, or feel alone dealing with mental health or substance use issues. Help might be closer than you think. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is here for Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. With our network of partners, like your local county veterans service officer, we can help connect veterans with services such as medical care, financial and legal assistance, housing, mental health services, substance use treatment, and more. We stand ready to serve you. For more information, call 1-800-WIS-VETS or visit wisvets.com. That's WISVETS.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs with funding provided by the Milwaukee Brewers and the Brewers Community Foundation.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
When I see the connection, though I see, I don't stare. Though I see, I don't stare.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Kelby on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text. Same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or what used to be Twitter. Our guest is the Reverend Mark Elston. He's a minister, executive director of Press House, a campus ministry, student housing community at UW-Madison, also co-founded Rooted Good, which is a nonprofit that helps churches think creatively about how to use their spaces. I have a text I wanted to share with you, Reverend, from Dave in New Berlin. I'm an atheist, but I respect how important faith is to those who practice. What's your advice to an atheist that respects your cause?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I would say that this is an area where the sort of the use of church spaces is an area where there's a lot of potential collaboration and partnership and shared interest between people of different faiths or no faith. I think what we're proposing is essentially thinking about the use of space for the good of communities, and that can come from a faith perspective or not. And in many cases, those relationships across those lines lead to better outcomes. I often feel like that municipalities and just neighborhood leaders can really make a difference in thinking about spaces as they come available. So if a church in your neighborhood is closing or rethinking about its use and how it might use its land or its property, support it, you know, get involved with it, figure out, offer suggestions, be a part of the solution. Unfortunately, we have so often tension between, you know, people of faith and people of not of faith in ways that we really don't need to. I can understand why that happens, but in this instance, very often there's a lot of alignment where we can move forward together.
Well, and as you've said, this is about benefiting the entire community. This is about benefiting the neighborhood and doing what is best for our neighbors and people who live in that community. So there should be room enough for all of us to take part in something like that. Greg from Waukesha is on the line. Thank you for joining us, Greg. What did you want to say?
Jane and Greg and Pastor, hello. Good morning to you. Pastor, first of all, I love what you have to say, because it essentially all boils down to Acts 2, right? Acts chapter 2, the Acts 2 church. And so I love that. A couple of quick just questions, if I may. One would be, I do work with a lot of college students here in Waukesha and university students. And how best would you say to guide them to a faith relationship? And then my second question is, do you think that mega churches can actually produce harm? Do you think there can be any harm done with, you know, through a mega church kind of set up? I'm just curious what your thoughts.
Appreciate your questions, Greg. Thank you so very much, Reverend Mark.
Yeah, good questions. I mean, they're both big.
Yeah, well, we only got about 3.5 minutes left.
Right.
So
how do you get
right to it, Reverend?
How do you help college students? I mean, in my experience, college students are looking first and foremost for relationship and community and meaningful friendships. And that's the starting point that we typically work with. So meaningful relationship with both friends and then mentors. And then they're also looking for conversations about meaning, what matters in life, you know, especially maybe in this moment that we're all living in right now, but what really matters in life. And that's where I would start. And then kind of just let them, you know, guide those conversations and listen to where they're at and help them think about, does faith play a role in it? Does God play a role in their understanding of the world and their place in it? As far as the other question, I think I would say that any faith community of any tradition can be either helpful or harmful. I'm not sure that I could say that mega churches specifically are or aren't, or small churches or churches of any particular kind.
Sure.
Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. I think clearly there are leaders that can be harmful. Clearly there are cultures and church approaches and theologies and teachings that can be harmful to people. There's no question about it. But that could be across a whole bunch of different spectrums. And so my hope is that more churches are helpful and life-giving and sort of love-inspiring, and less of them are harmful.
Well, and it, going back to real briefly to one of Greg's questions about making a connection with college students, isn't it also about how you, the example that you set and how you live through life? If you want to talk to someone about your faith and why this is a good thing, then again, it's going back to walking the walk, and what do they see when they see you out in the world?
Yeah, and there's no question that the young people we work with, they really want to see you, us involved, and them involved, and our ministry involved in things that really matter to them. They're not interested in just simply getting together to talk about the Bible unless there's some actual application of that. And that means applying that to social justice issues, to issues of community, to even to politics where appropriate, you know, all of that. I think they want to be involved in these things, you know, and if the faith is not applied and connected to the other parts of life, then it's pointless. Often is the way I think young people see it.
And I think that a person, you know, I know some people are searching for community in a way where they will take sort of whatever, what will come to them the first, whatever, whoever takes them in first. I think whatever the mission of that church or that faith-based group, that's where you make your decision on, you know, is there a decision about service and service to others of all sorts, what you were talking about, inclusion. I think that's important. And as far as Dave is talking about, as myself, an atheist as well, I respect the good works of everybody who has the heart to be helpful to everybody. So if a church is here to hand out food or hand out clothing and they want to help the people of the community, I'm there. I respect it. I love it. I don't come from, there's a lot of people who say like, well, atheists are mad at God. Well, I don't believe. I'm not mad. It's my decision, but my decision to love and respect groups like what you do, Mark, to help the community is something that, like I said before, is a perfect reflection of Christ's love, helping others and taking care of them.
That's putting the New Testament into action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the most fun, most exciting, most interesting way to live it out, in my view. Yeah.
The Reverend Mark Elston is a Presbyterian minister, executive director of Press House, campus ministry and student housing community at UW-Madison, also co-founder of Rooted Good, a nonprofit that helps churches think creatively about how to use their spaces. We're going to include the link that to the article I found in WPR in our show notes today if you would like to find out more of the work that Reverend Mark is doing there in Madison. And please keep us posted, Reverend, and let us know how things are going. And if we can ever help you get the word out about what you're doing, we would be more than happy to do so.
That sounds great. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Reverend Mark Elston, news is coming up next when we return. Tipping and taxes on tips. We'll kick that around next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Sure. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. Vice President Harris says she will continue consolidating her support as the likely Democratic presidential nominee, making a campaign stop in Milwaukee.
I will spend the coming weeks continuing to unite our party so that we are ready to win in November.
Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle has resigned.
Acting Secret Service Director Ron Rowe will now lead the agency. In the meantime, the U.S. House has launched a bipartisan task force to investigate the assassination attempt, with the Secret Service's own review due in about 2 months.
CBS News correspondent Scott McFarlane. Donna Massey, mother of Sonia Massey, who was shot and killed by a sheriff's deputy in Springfield, Illinois, says police initially lied.
They told the doctor at the hospital that she committed suicide first, and then they changed it.
The ex-officer is charged with murder. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Sapp. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris says her work as a prosecutor has prepared her to defeat Donald Trump this November. Kamala Harris kicked off her presidential campaign Tuesday with a visit to Milwaukee, only 2 days after Joe Biden dropped out of the race.
Do we want to live in a country of freedom, compassion, and rule of law, or a country of chaos, fear, and hate? And here's the beauty of this moment. We each have the power to answer that question.
Harris has already raised over $100,000 towards her campaign since Sunday afternoon. Mark your calendars. The largest annual meteor showers are coming soon. The Perseid meteor shower is active every year from mid-July to late August. The shower is expected to reach peak activity this year the night of August 12th and early in the morning on August 13th. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Here's a retro Pete pick if you're looking for something to watch. I've been reworking my way through Richard Linklater's Sunset Trilogy. Just brilliant. I just finished the second installment, Before Sunset, and not only does it hold up over time, I think I like it even better. The film follows Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy in their quirky, unconventional relationship. It is definitely worth a watch or a rewatch. Here is a blockbuster spotlight pick for this week. Deadpool and Wolverine opens July 26th. This will be the third installment in the Deadpool franchise from Marvel and is expected to keep the box office steam going for another weekend. Will it overtake Twisters for the number one spot at the box office? It's the heavyweight bout of the summer, but in this case, the people will decide. How's that for democracy? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For the overnight, partly cloudy skies, light winds, and some patchy fog forming. Lows will drop to the upper 50s. After the morning patchy fog, we'll see mostly sunny but hazy skies, light winds, or highs will top out in the upper 70s. Right now, it's 58.
The Todd Alba Show.
Reed Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project.
Project 2025 says that for the first time in 30 years, we want to restart testing of nuclear weapons. Tell me who that's good for. Yeah. I'm not sure it's really good for anybody. I have no proof of this. I think Donald Trump wants to see a mushroom cloud. I think he wants to feel the warm glow of an H-bomb on his pasty orange skin. I think he wants to feel the power.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
John Ellingson is our guest. He's one of the co-directors of the Eau Claire Cube League.
It's a Swedish yard game. You would toss a baton trying to knock down your opponent's cubes.
You have teams from all over the country. What are some of the other names that stuck out to you?
Cube Hand Luke.
Nice. Yeah.
The Salty Baton.
Oh. Do you call the last 16 teams the Swedish 16?
Oh, I'm writing that down. That's pretty good.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
Wednesday morning, we visit with Congressman Mark Pocan about the current presidential campaign chaos and his take on last week's Republican convention.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Coming up at noon, we have the news followed by Todd Alba from noon to 2 p.m. Vice President Kamala Harris is holding her first rally since announcing she will be running for president. So she's expected to speak sometime around 1 p.m. Civic Media will be there. Reporter Stuart J. Waddles, I know, is going to be reporting from there. And Todd Alba, I believe, will also be dipping in and out of her speech today. But that is coming up a little bit later on across this Civic Media radio network.
It's exciting days.
It is exciting days.
Feeling good.
Yeah. We want to talk about tips.
I got some tips for you.
If you're a tipped worker,
yeah.
If you're a waiter or a waitress or whatever, if you are a tipped worker, mm-hmm. We would love to hear from you about Donald Trump's proposal to end federal taxes on tips. The elimination of tip taxes has gotten interest, according to the Cap Times, from Republicans in D.C., despite an estimated $250 billion loss in federal revenues over 10 years. Trump said at a rally in Vegas earlier this year to those hotel workers and people who get tips, "You're going to be very happy when I get to office. We are not going to charge taxes on tips or people making tips."
First of all, that's not going to happen. Don't be fooled. I was a tipped worker. I worked many jobs where I was tipped, and I paid taxes on those tips happily because that's just a part of it. And don't let him push this as a tax break for the workers, because one, this doesn't affect everybody.
Right.
Not everyone gets tipped.
Right.
And two, 250, what did they say? 250
billion.
250 billion with a B, my friends, a B. That is a lot of lost revenue.
And where would that come from?
Yeah. And then you want to throw on top of that, the tax cuts they're going to make for the very, very wealthy. So you don't want to, I just think this is pandering to the highest regard. Plus if he gets elected, he steps into office, he ain't going to care a lick about this anymore. Oh, sorry.
All the promises that have been made, have a feeling won't get fulfilled.
I mean, I'm still waiting for the entire wall to be finished.
That Mexico is going to pay for.
Didn't they? Wait, Jane.
Yeah, no.
Jane, look at me. Are you telling me that Mexico didn't pay for the tiny bit of the wall that was already built?
They did not pay for the tiny bit of wall that was built.
Let's raise their tariffs.
Peter Rickman is the president and organizer of the Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Union. Quote, "I don't think anyone should take this as a serious attempt by Republicans to make a play for the hospitality industry. Most hospitality workers are going to see right through this as utterly failing to address the challenges. We think hospitality workers need to improve take-home income and our living standards."
Yeah.
Yeah. Tipped income of more than $20 a month is taxable. If a person earns less than $32,000 a year, they're exempt from federal income tax at all. The Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates this applies to about half of Wisconsin waiters. So Trump's proposal isn't going to do anything for them.
Hmm. Wow. Shocking.
Thousands of other employees would be affected, according to the Cap Times. Wisconsin has one of the highest concentrations of bartenders. Shocking.
What?
Of any state in the country, plus porters, drivers, and others who earn tips could see a benefit from the tax cut. Many in the industry, though, say this misses the point about imbalance in wages for people in those jobs.
And let's say in a perfect world, this happens. Let's say in a perfect world, they cut the tax on tips. You get to take home your 100% of your tips. It's in your pay package. Let's face it, if you have cash, you're not telling the government anymore.
Right.
But point is, those people who want to keep you at a very low wage will then find a new way to put you over a barrel. They'll lower your hourly wage because, well, you're making more on tips now, so I don't have to pay you as much. Or they'll start taking a cut of your tips because We've seen this before. Bosses cutting tips, keeping tips,
yes,
or just doing whatever they can to absolutely, I'll say it, screw the worker. So if this happens, it's not going to be anybody but the tipped worker who is going to get put out even more. I guarantee you.
I think you make a good point. Andrew from Maine texting in, listening here on WAUK. Does Trump's no tip tax plan apply to gratuities received by public officials and Supreme Court justices?
By the Supreme Court? Well, no, because it's a tip after. It's a gratuity after the fact. So that, enjoy your RV tax free, right. Associate Justice. I won't mention your name rhymes with Schmalerenth Pommes.
John from Menominee Falls. Well, Trump's plan is to raise the percentage of the lowest income tax brackets, so he'll be screwing you in the end, even if your tips are untaxed. How about if we just make the first $40,000 everybody earns in this country tax-free and then ramp up the tax brackets from there?
Hey, man, I'm fine with that. I pay taxes. I'm not rich, and I pay taxes happily.
No one likes paying taxes. Nobody likes paying taxes. But I think we all like clean water,
yeah,
and sewage systems that function, and roads we can drive on, and police, and other things that our tax dollars go to pay for.
I'll say this again. If you want to stop paying taxes, okay, now you have to afford to pay for all those services yourself. And you want to drive on a road, you got to pay a high toll because those roads need to be looked after.
Yep.
You want garbage service, you have to pay for your own garbage service. All those things that our city or county or municipality run, you now have to pay for it. You want to enjoy anything, you have to pay for it.
And that works out well for people like Jeff Bezos and Elmo.
Yeah.
You know, they got the money. They could do that. They could build their own communities. Most of the rest of us, not so much.
Who just wants to? Yeah, I don't want to live in that community. Ugh.
855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Mark from Prairie du Sac, thank you for your patience. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, not a problem. And the previous texter, you know, said something that I was going to say, is that, you know, this is just for the Supreme Court guys, so they don't need to declare their bribes as income. Because before the fact, it is still a bribe. Don't give me this crap about it being a gratuity. You know, so just the mere fact you move it to after the fact, it makes a difference. No, it's still a bribe. I remember some 40 years ago, a woman I was dating actually was telling me that she was actually getting taxed on tips she didn't receive because the business owner was actually estimating what they would be getting in tips, and she wasn't necessarily getting that in tips. I mean, that, and of course that was back in the day when everybody just put cash down on the table and left the wait staff, you know, whatever gratuity is on the table after they paid for their bill. But that's the kind of thing that's still going on. You know, not everybody pays with plastic at the till right now, but that's what we mostly see right now. But this is just a scam. And I mean, if we want to change things, really truly change things, you eliminate the whole different category for tipped workers. You just say everybody's getting a living minimum wage and boost the minimum wage up to what it actually should be, like they do in the European countries, where you apparently just do not tip in some of the European countries.
No, you do not.
You don't, yeah, yes. No.
I went to England, and I started to put down some money, and I got my wrist grabbed. Like, no, don't do that here.
Right.
Because we pay them a living wage. And now they used to talk about living wage. They were like $15 an hour. Well, guess what? Now it has to be closer to 20 because the cost of living goes up.
And as a reminder, the federal minimum wage is 7.25.
Oh, yeah.
And it has been for decades.
And I'm pretty sure the server's minimum wage is still in the twos.
Twos, yeah. We're talking about the former president's proposal that he wants to eliminate federal taxes on tips and what a great advantage that's going to be for restaurant and service industry workers. And this is in the Cap Times. We'll include a link to the article once the show notes are up.
$2.13.
$2.13
for servers and whoever the boss wants to pay them like that. Because you're getting tipped so much, you're basically making $40 an hour. Yeah, maybe in June on a Saturday, but in December on a Tuesday, I'm making $2.13 an hour.
That's insane.
Exactly.
That's insane. Are you a tipped worker? We would love to hear from you and your thoughts on this. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, if you want to join the conversation. Melissa Medic helps manage a George Webb's. She's skeptical of both major party candidates, but she says she's worried that ending tip taxes will make problems for the payroll system. And she's concerned the one tax code change could lead to a domino effect that will ultimately hurt workers.
I mean, they start changing the tax code for this one, they're going to go in and rework some of the other language. And before we know it, the people who own the restaurants don't have to pay as much in tax either. Or this is going to end up putting the worker over the barrel, as it always does.
Another woman, Haley Tron, who's worked in many spots in hospitality as a tipped worker, said she'd like to see the industry move away from it, but noted that tips are a big reason her bartending positions have been as lucrative as they are. However, she also said that ending taxes on tips could exacerbate disparities between those who work in the front of the house, like waiters, and those folks in the kitchen.
I used to work in a place where the tips were convoluted and separated in a way that just did not work. And it bred so much tension.
And resentment.
Oh my gosh, between this group and that group and this group. And then when I went to go work back there again, they said, we've changed it all. It all goes into a pot. We split it by seniority or by how many days you worked. That is how we do it. And it was so much better.
Well, I can't imagine how resentful.
Oh, no. If front of house never talked to the kitchen never talked to this. No one liked each other, or no one really got along.
Well, there's this competition then, right?
Ugh.
Tom from LA has been waiting. Thank you for your patience, Tom. What did you want to say about tipping?
Well, I think Greg made a really good point before, which is, you know, hey, if your house is burning down, make sure that you've paid your dues for the month, so you actually get your fire taken care of for your house, even if it's going to set the next door's neighbor's house on fire as well, because of our socialistic fire department that we all put money into. As far as tips go, I don't know. I know a lot of bartenders and a lot of servers, you know, a lot of them don't pay full tax on their tips anyway. So it's cash. It comes to them.
Right.
And they will pay a portion of them. But so why do we need to be screwing around with this thing anyway? And I'll tell you, for a state that's now gone to $17 an hour for our minimum wage here in California, it has been wonderful. It's been tough at first. You see an increase a little bit in prices, but after that, the owners had to start lowering the prices again because they realized that people weren't going to pay those high prices, and now we're moving them back down, and the people are getting $17 an hour. It has been great. It's been a really, really good thing, and that's why it actually adds to the economy when you do something like that.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thank you so much for listening. Really always appreciate it. 855-752-4842. Joe from Middleton, just got about a minute and a half left. Joe, what'd you want to say about tips?
I barely have a minute and a half before my appointment starts, but apparently you covered the tip sharing part of it while I wasn't, while my radio wasn't on. But yeah, that's the other thing, is that tip pools get distributed to people that have absolutely nothing to do with the service. Mm. And employers use that to steal it from you. There are two things that I want to get across, though. And one is that, oh, God. One of them has to do with how much people pay in taxes. Mm-hmm. And, oh, the other thing is, who declares what is a who gets gratuities? Who declares whether or not something is a hospitality job? Can anybody get a gratuity? Can I get a $5 million gratuity?
Well, the Supreme Court said so.
Joe, if you're a Supreme Court justice, yes, you can.
As long as it happens after the fact, Joe.
Right. We got to go to break, Joe. Thank you so very much for calling. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. Coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Reed Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project on Project 2025.
Donald Trump, Mr. Vance, when you say mass deportation, what do those words actually mean? Tell me how you're going to identify those people. Tell me where you're going to put those people. Something like a mass deportation suddenly becomes a massive forced roundup of people who maybe have been here 6 months and maybe have been here 60 years.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local civic media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local civic media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from downtown Waukesha. You can join us, call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Just a quick reminder, Wisconsin's fall primary is coming up just a couple weeks, August 13th. It's right around the corner. Make a plan to vote. We have two very important constitutional amendments on the ballot. Even if this is the only thing on your ballot,
yes,
you need to go and vote no on these two constitutional amendments, which will essentially take the power of the purse for federal dollars away from the governor and give it back to the Joint Finance Committee, which does nothing but sit on big piles of money. Apparently, that's what they like to do. So go to myvote.wi.gov, myvote.wi.gov. You can get a look at your ballot, mm-hmm. what it's going to look like,
yep.
anything you need to know, myvote.wi.gov. Make a plan to vote and go with your friends and get other people to go with you and go to the polls.
Yep.
This is not a hot, sexy primary, except for probably the 3rd congressional district.
Yeah.
But yeah. This is very important. So,
and just be aware, you are no longer able to request an absentee ballot.
That's right.
You're past the deadline, so you either have to vote in-person absentee. So call your municipality, your town, village, city board, or hall, and ask them for in-person absentee ballot, or go on the day of. But you can still also request, and I did this already, requested my absentee ballot for the presidential election in November. So you find all that great stuff, and also whether or not you are registered.
Yeah. Keep an eye on that.
Yes.
Keep an eye on that. I wanted to wrap up the show with something I found about 25 minutes ago that just... It makes me snort, Greg Bach. It makes me snort.
And to be fair, I don't know what this is. Finding out right now.
Jesse Waters.
Oh, God. Next.
Of fake Fox News. Fined almost $1 billion for lying to their audience.
Wait, say that one more time.
Fined almost $1 billion for lying to their audience. Oopsie.
Jesse Waters?
Jesse Waters on fake Fox News.
Okay. All right. Darn it.
Getting a little heat after making some comments about Vice President Kamala Harris now running for president. She's going to be speaking in Milwaukee within the next couple of hours. Stay tuned to your 2 Civic Media. Speaking about Vice President Kamala Harris, Jesse Waters, in all his intelligence, said, quote, "She didn't earn this. She inherited it. And Americans aren't hot on airs. They like self-made men and women."
Hold on. I got to find that check that Trump's dad wrote to him for $1 million.
$400 million. It was $413 million Trump got from his father. $413 million.
Well, that was after he died, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the initial $1 million, not to mention the couple million he bought in casino chips, because I don't know how you fail a casino, but Trump did it. Wow.
Let's talk, Jesse Waters, about the qualifications of Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner to have access to the White House. Let's talk about her qualifications as a shoe plagiarizer and how that translates into the most important office in the country. I'm sure Jesse can explain it to me.
Make me understand.
Make me understand. It also turns out that Jesse Waters' maternal great-grandfather was the publisher of the Saturday Evening Post. The Washington Post reports that Jesse Waters on fake Fox News got his entry-level job at Fox after being fired for incompetence at three other jobs. He got his job at Fox News when his mother, child psychologist Ann Purvis, daughter of Morton Bailey, publisher of Better Homes and Gardens, he got the job at Fox when his mom called an ex-congressman who knew someone at the network.
And not for nothing here, but Jesse Waters was also supposed to be the King High of comedy there, too. He was going to be the Jon Stewart. They wanted to make him the Jon Stewart.
Jesse Waters?
Yes, because he was the only one who could even feign a sense of humor there. Everybody else is incapable of doing that. Their humor is mean and mean-spirited and stupid. Jesse Waters was supposed to be the fun guy. If you ever want to see something hilarious, Daily Show, Jesse Waters, Chinatown. Look that up and watch him just make a complete horse's patoot of himself. But that's what they wanted. They wanted him to be their Jon Stewart. Spoiler alert, he was not. Now he's like their main guy.
Yeah.
He is their the Bill O'Reilly, the Tucker Carlson. I don't think people like him as much.
There is something inherently smarmy about him. And when he talked about how, because he was married with two children at the time that he met his now current wife.
Family values.
She was a producer for his show. And he talks about how he let air out of her tires so she would have to ask him for a ride home. He's talked about this on the air.
That's
creepy.
Disgusting.
Stalkery.
That's just scratching criminal right there, in my opinion. Ugh. God, what a creep.
Wes from Middleton texting in, we can't all be self-made men like third-generation Eric Hovde.
I mean, my dad was a truck driver. My grandpa was not great with jobs, but, like, I should be the president of the United States of America. I don't know, but, like, this whole thing, like, I don't know how you say that when Google is right behind you saying, check me. Check me right now.
Jesse Waters, thank you for your insights. I like to have a big laugh when we wrap up the show.
Oh, that was a hearty Jane laugh
at
right there.
All possible. Loud Lady Laughers always welcome on this show.
Loud Lady Laughers. We got to teach that t-shirt's happening.
Okay.
Matt and Aaron out. Loud Lady Laughers.
Loud Lady
welcome.
Laughers. News is coming up next. Todd Alba from noon to 2 p.m. Vice President Kamala Harris in Milwaukee today, mm-hmm. going to be speaking. Now that she is announced, she is running for president, and it should be exciting. We'll have coverage for you tomorrow. Jesse Waters just brought this to mind. Donald Trump likes to talk about how he surrounds himself with all the best people.
The best people.
We're going to take a look, a closer look, at some of these best people in Donald Trump's inner circle. I think you will find it very interesting. Dr. Laura Hanks will be here with public service announcements at 11:33. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. Thank you most of all for calling and texting and listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. News is next. We'll see you in the morning. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Crude and Dom.
Tune in Wednesday for a special hump day edition of The Devil's Advocate. We'll preview Joe Biden's speech to the nation and we'll host Angela Lang. Tune in Devils.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6. impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because feeling full can sound like this.
How did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
And like this.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.